You're listening to the Long Box Crusade podcast, episode 42, featuring Deadpool number 44. Its cover date, September of 2000. Welcome to the 42nd episode of the Long Box Crusade, the original Long Box Crusade, where it all started. I am your host, Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, aka Death Probe. The Long Box Crusade is a podcast where each episode, a random cover month and year is chosen, and then an issue is selected from one of the Long Box Crusade crew members' comic collection. Except in this case, it is from a Crusaders Club member, but it's also in Delvin's collection. It used to be in mine. I think I sold off my Black Panther run. Well, the part of it that I don't have hardbound anyway. Fancy. Anyways, each episode we will summarize, review, and reminisce about the issue, the ads, and the events of the time period. Joining me for this episode, I have two people. Jason's on vacation. Pat's doing some family stuff. So, I will start with Delvin. 10 words or less. Delvin the Dark Web Williams, what is your current crusade? Go!
Just taught a class in jiu-jitsu. I was proud.
I like it. Well done. Well done.
I'm professional over here, Jared. I'm not messing around.
Mm-mm. Proud of you. Teaching's fun. I know I've taught several self-defense classes myself. Good for you. Good for you.
I can help you on the finer points of a head and arm choke from side control, if you like. And the bread cutter choke from side control.
I mean, all the access, right?
All the access. Just let me know. I will come to your place. I'll put a gi on you, and I'll be happy to choke the crap out of you. Full service.
That's right. For just $1 a month, Delvin will come choke the crap out of you. Some people might like it. Never mind. You know what? Let's move on. We have our special guest. He's a Crusaders Club member. He stepped up when we put the announcement out on the Crusaders Club page, which is patreon.com/longboxcrusade. And he provided this episode's issue. It is Mr. Ezra Gallo. Do you currently have a crusade, and can you cram it into 10 words or less?
Defeating the Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Nice. Nice. Oh, that sounds pretty awesome. Yeah, I see my son working on that.
It's very awesome.
Yeah, it looks awesome. I definitely did the one before. It was at the Breath of the Wild. Definitely interested in getting to the Tears of the Kingdom once I can wrestle it away from my son.
Breath of the Wild, also cool. The best thing that I wasn't expecting was that all the horses you have in your stable on Breath of the Wild show up in the stable when you start playing Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, so nice.
So you don't have to catch new horses.
So they are definitely not horsing. You know what? Never mind.
Nay, Jared, nay.
My current crusade, 10 words or less.
Go.
Convention season.
Ooh. Bad.
8 words to spare.
Alabama educated, but I'm pretty sure 2 is less than 10, so I think you did it.
So, yes, this coming weekend, I have Deep South Para Comic Con in Ozark, Alabama. And then 2 weeks after that, you will catch me at Dragon Con in Atlanta. By the time this comes out, audio-wise, those will be long done. So, that's what happened in my past, ladies and gentlemen. But for those of you watching live, that's where you can find. All right, folks, we invite you to be part of the show by submitting your comments and memories, which may be featured on a future show. Reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, and YouTube at Long Box Crusade. You can always leave a voicemail at 707-532-5269. 707-532-LBOX. Make it sexy.
Pick up the phone.
Hot. We hope you come along with us on this crusade to read them all. Now, before we get started with the episode's issue review, Let's take a quick podcast promo break, and we will be right back.
Thousand words, 5,000 individual entries, 453 pages, 271 stories covered, 80 original illustrations. It all adds up to one book, The James Bond Lexicon, the unofficial guide to the worlds of James Bond in movies, novels, TV, and comics by Alan J. Porter and Gillian J. Porter. Now available from White Rocket Books and via your favorite online bookstore. For more information, visit the companion website at jamesbondlexicon.online or follow us on Twitter at @BondLexicon.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. Today's adventure from the long box is Deadpool 44, cover dated September of 2000. In your issue credits, thanks to Mike's Amazing World, goes a little something like this. Deadpool 44 was published by Marvel September of 2000. Its on sale date was actually July 26th of 2000. Cover price is $2.25. Editor is Michael March. The writer is James C. Owsley, better known as Christopher Priest. Penciler is Jim Calafiore. The inker is Jonathan E. Holdridge. Letterer is Christopher P. something that starts with an E. The colorist is Shannon Blanchard. It's been reprinted in Black Panther by Christopher Priest, the complete collection of Volume 2 trade paperback. There's nothing of significance in the letters page, and the cover credits go to Jim Calafiore. And speaking of the cover, I will now give my own cover description. The Deadpool logo is white with red highlights. The Marvel Comics corner box is yellow with red highlights, and it features the Achebe hand puppet, Doki, seen in this issue. The main action features a leopard. I like the spots. And behind that unaware leopard holding a capture net is Deadpool. And behind that unaware Deadpool waiting to pounce is the Black Panther. All right, guys, what did you think of this cover? We will start with Ezra.
I really like the cover. I think one of my favorite things is how Black Panther has the neck piece and the stuff on his wrist. So you know what Black Panther it is. If you follow Black Panther, you can tell that it's Killmonger as Black Panther just by seeing that cover, which I thought was a cool touch. And I like the details and everything. My only question is, why is Black Panther the size of Dwayne The Rock Johnson in this photo or in this illustration?
Because other than Killmonger, that, man, he's bigger
that's
T'Challa.
True. He's a big dude. But I really like it. I think it's a really good cover.
I wouldn't argue with you on that. What about you, Delvin? Cover thoughts?
I was trying to Google the correct pronunciation of Chrissy. I think it's Eliopoulos, but don't hold me to that. That feels right, though.
If I was forced to guess, I would have said Eliopoulos. In fact, Christopher P. Eliopoulos. There you have it, Pat, in the editing room, in case you need it.
Very nice. For whatever reason, I was just reminded of on the Batman 66 show, they were crawling up. You know how they crawled up the wall sometimes? And then they were looking and they asked the guy randomly. It was like, yeah, oh, hey, you know, what's your name? And the guy was like, Staphylococcus, Ralph Staphylococcus. But you can call me Ralph for short. Like, random. Like, what? Why? I guess someone needed to say the word Staphylococcus. Anyway, cover. It's good. And much like Ezra, I was wondering why in the heck was Black Panther so jacked? I was like, were they trying to, like, you know, 90s spy him where he was supposed to just look all friggin' diesel and everything? And then sure enough, as soon as I started reading, I'm like, okay, it's Eric Killmonger. That makes a lot of sense. And for whatever reason, I really like that, you know, Deadpool sneaking up on the leopard, but he has that smile on his face and you can see the smile through the costume. I just thought that was a really cool touch. So really cool cover by Mr. Calafiore. What do you think, man?
I concur with both you and Ezra. I really like, as you kind of were alluding to there, it's hard to do a cover like comedic with just image work. Sometimes you need to use a word bubble or whatever, but this is comedic because it's that two levels. It's that you know, Deadpool is clearly pleased with himself about to bag the leopard. But what he doesn't know is there's a much bigger threat looming behind him. So it's like that, look behind you kind of moment. I really like the stacked head symmetry. I like the background that they used for it, which was a black background with sort of a blue glowing light going down the center. It just really makes everything really pop off the page. It's great balance. It's great art. It's great comedic effect. You get a cool 2.5D effect with Kill Panther being in front of the Deadpool logo. You get the net that actually kind of covers part of the corner box with the other part, or I can't tell. It's hard to tell. I think the cover box kind of lays over the net for the most part. But anyway, it's just a very interesting, very interactive cover, and I quite like it. I was fortunate to meet Mr. Jim Calafiore at a con many years ago, and he was such a nice guy. And I believe it was about the time he was on this book, actually. Very nice guy, easy to talk to. So good times for all. And I must say that in our Crusaders Club, patreon.com/longboxcrusade group, when I posted about this, I believe it was Albert Elvis that was like, why is Black Panther so jacked? And I was like, haha, spoiler alert, that's not the Black Panther. Well, it is the Black Panther. It's not T'Challa. So lots going on here. And you know what? Speaking of lots going on here, our listening audience might be wondering what the heck is going on in this storyline. And our guest for this episode actually prepared the synopsis and will now deliver it. I hand it to you, Ezra.
This issue begins with backstory from recent Black Panther comics. After losing a challenge from Killmonger, T'Challa awakens from a coma in a weakened state, stripped of the mantle of Black Panther. At the same time, a mysterious man approaches the Merc with the Mouth, Deadpool, requesting he recover his missing pet kitty. The man is Achebe, and the kitty is a rare spotted leopard. Deadpool takes the gig, and we rapidly learn the cat actually belongs to Killmonger, who, as the new Black Panther, is meeting with the Avengers about possible membership. Deadpool infiltrates Avengers HQ and transports the feline back to the Dead Lounge before getting caught up in a Goliath battle with Kill Panther and the other Avengers. But it turns out Achebe has double-crossed Wade Wilson. Where is the cat? Who stands to gain? And what will happen to Deadpool's hand puppet?
Well done. We're going to have to replace a couple people that are normally on this podcast, I think, with one take Ezra Gallo there.
It makes sense. Makes sense.
You did a good job. Thank you for that.
The only thing I'll add, and you can sign up, is you can cut it, obviously, but we were at that con together where you met Calafiore. I have my autographed copy right here in front of me.
Nice. Awesome. I thought we might have been. That's cool. That makes us even better. Ezra and Delvin and I have been friends a long time, ladies and gentlemen. Going back to, we were at a con in 2000. Goodness gracious. 23 years ago. What the hell has happened? Anyways, we are doing this one live, and I've seen some folks in the chat asking about cover ratings. This is an old school long box. We don't actually do ratings on this one. We just have discussions. And speaking of which, we only have one round of discussions, not the two rounds. It's not the highs or lows. It's just, we're going to talk about what you thought about the story. We're going to talk about what they thought of the art. So basically, you gotta basically be pat on this one. Just say everything that's on your mind when it's your turn to talk. So speaking of which, we just had a really good synopsis of the story by Mr. Ezra Gallo. Ezra, what are your thoughts on the story overall?
I like the story a lot. I don't really read comics as often now. I kind of just dabble at this point. But back at this point, I was reading them, you know, obviously a lot. We were going to cons, and this brought me right back into the middle of Deadpool. I got the idea of who Deadpool was, as well as getting to see, you know, one of my other favorite characters, Black Panther, and to see the way it progressed and, you know, sets up a multi-part story, pulling in some Avengers, pulling in Black Panther. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, this was definitely a great high watermark, I think, in both Deadpool and Black Panther. I definitely remember reading this and being steeped in it as well. And as I mentioned earlier, there's nothing of importance in the letters page of this issue. And with that, we will go to...
I don't think that's correct.
All right. Before we move to Delvin, let me just let everybody know that our friend Ezra Gallo, who's on this episode, also has a letter printed in the back of this book. Ezra and I both started writing a bunch of letters to comics back at this point. And Ezra's... got printed first. Like, I think I was in something like
this was it. No, yeah, this was it.
This was it. Yeah. Ezra's got his, this was the one that got printed first between the two of us. And in fact, he signed my copy with, I was first. I think I still have this issue now. I think of it because you signed it. I think I know exactly where it is. Anyways, he signed it. I was first and he signed back in the letters page. So yeah, he beat me on that one. So, congratulations on that letter. Everybody, if you got the floppy version, go to the back and read Ezra's letter when you get a chance. Or you can read it while Delvin's talking if you want to. Delvin, thoughts on the story?
I'd read it while I'm talking. I'll never say anything important anyway. overall, it was good. I was glad because Jared and I, before even when I picked the book, sort of started talking about what we remembered about Chris Priest's run on Deadpool. He had a tough act to follow in that he followed Joe Kelly, who put together probably the seminal Deadpool run, where Deadpool was just hilarious. He was hilariously written, kept getting into hilarious situations, and yet somehow Joe Kelly interwove this storyline that was intricate, and it wound up like in issue 25 or so, just having this like emotional punch that you did not ever see coming, and it was fantastic. And Chris Priest came along and he had a tough act to follow, and he followed it very well. He didn't try and be Joe Kelly. He tried to be Chris Priest, which is more than enough. Chris Priest has written tons and tons of really good books with a lot of intricacy. Probably the best among them is Black Panther, of which he introduced the character of Elliot Ross. And Elliot Ross, as you could see, as soon as you read page one of this book, you see Elliot Ross's utility. Chris Priest can speak about the mysterious Black Panther through Elliot Ross. And then he threw a little bit of comedy in there, too, where a lot of times T'Challa is a very serious character. He's not known for his humor. He's known for his coolness and his actions. And so Everett coming in was a kind of not comedy break, because he had his purpose of being the attaché to the United States government, but he allowed for a more human element to come into the book. It played well here. And then when you get into Deadpool, you had a pretty serious storyline going on, but there was that humor interwoven throughout the entire book that you never forgot that this was a Deadpool book. And there was a little, like, I don't actually think there's too much breaking of the fourth wall, but you did get like good down to earth humor of where he's fighting the Avengers. And at one point was just like, it's like, yeah, you know, ordinarily I would take on the Avengers, but I've convinced myself this whole thing isn't happening, which is just, it's fantastic. And then the serious beat of back again in the Black Panther, I've forgotten that in that run of the Black Panther, Killmonger challenged Black Panther and beat him. And I'm wondering, is that what they took the movie beat from? And if they did, Ezra's nodding his head. So I was like, oh, so they did borrow that from the comic books, which is cool too. So lots of cool stuff in the book. I was glad to read another one of Priest's books. Calafiore had really good artwork that just complemented it nicely. And you can tell that like there were just great little pieces interwoven throughout. Like, for instance, the secret of Titania that was interwoven. I can't remember what that secret was. I think she really wasn't Titania. Spoiler alert. But other than that,
she was female.
That was so funny. It was like, are you a man?
Who was that? What's that guy's name? Is that Whiplash?
Constrictor.
It was driving me nuts. It's probably a comic too. I probably read it.
Yeah, I love that. I was like, I haven't gotten to see you naked either. That's not fair. a lot of goodness in the book. Like, because you can have a book that's just silly, like dumb, like, you know, the movie Dumb and Dumber or something, but to have it silly, but still have that great element in there of having a good underpinning of a story. Really good read.
Absolutely agree.
After I read this, I Googled one thing. The only thing I found about, you talked about, did they take this from this, take the movie from this? And it just said that from all the various Googles, just said that most of the things that they took from comic books were Christopher Priest things into the movie. So
clearly.
Wow.
So that's all I could really find for what was taken from comics into the movie.
I'm sure Chris Priest was like, thank you. Thank you. Pay me. Also, thank you. So,
Listen, I think if we at least polled the three of us here, we said who had the best run on Black Panther ever, I bet we're 3 for 3 on Christopher Priest, because that had the best run of Black Panther ever.
Yeah, he just, that combination of making Black Panther cool, just, and being the smartest guy in the room at all times and being prepared at all times. Like, dude, like, you thought you had me. I'm playing chess. Yeah, I let you win this battle, but trust me, that means I win the war. Just, but this isn't Black Panther.
I'm going to springboard from that with my thoughts on the story. It was great to read this because, like Ezra said, you know, all of us, all three of us right on this panel right here were deep into comics at this time and really reading these crossover stories because Priest is writing Black Panther and he's writing Deadpool at the same time. So I did this sort of natural crossover. And just to underscore what Delvin said about Chris Priest, what a talent who can write this very sort of stoic and regal book like Black Panther, which was not devoid of humor. I think Everett Ross brought a lot of humor into the book, actually. So you could tell that Chris Priest was kind of a funny guy, but he wrote this really regal and powerful character. And it's very, you know, stern at times. And then over on Deadpool, he's just being an idiot and having fun, which is what you need to do with Deadpool. I mean, dude followed Joe Kelly, who defined it. I mean, Delvin mentioned that already. And he did an amazing job. And just to take these two storylines and weave them the way he did, this was definitely a masterful and magical time in comics. So definitely a fun read. Very funny. Delvin remembered before we even cracked this open, when I told Delvin what the options were and he picked this one, he was like, I think this is the Tom Cruise era of Deadpool. Which, for those of you who don't know, Deadpool, for some reason, I don't remember if it was an image inducer, if it was his actual face that just kept defaulting to look like Tom Cruise.
What happened was, I think he, and Ezra chime in if you want to, I think he ticked off death. Is that right?
Yeah, that's how I remember it. I remember it.
Yeah, he ticked off death. And as a consequence of ticking death off, what death did was change like a true part of his identity to where he got used to, of course, being that ugly merc, and that was part of his thing. And she made him beautiful. And he could not do anything whatsoever to get rid of that visage of the beautiful face. And so it was a running joke throughout the entire Priest run that people look at him and it's like, say, are you Tom Cruise? Which was hilarious.
The good times. So we definitely, by picking this issue, just got dropped into a very complicated, like, I remember just in the reread about a week ago I did this, I was like, man, this was a complicated time. I got a lot to remember and catch up on. But once I was in there, it was all good. So let's shift gears and talk about the art. We talked about Jim Calafiore being a pretty good dude. How do you like the way he draws them pictures, Ezra?
I really like the art. I think the art is really indicative of the time period. You know, I mean, I think it really encapsulates the art of the early 2000s, late 90s pretty well, at least, you know, on these comic books and of, you know, the Priest comic books and some of the Marvel comic book style. I really like the very first page where Deadpool is looking at the puppet, you know, pointing the gun at him, you know, from right there. That's a great, you know, or well, not the first page, but the first page with Deadpool, I should say. And I feel like that was just a really good start to the episode. And then there were other, I mean, episode to the issue. And then there were other pages throughout that really did that. And I thought the action was drawn really well, which, you know, sometimes that's tough to do. But I was able to follow along with the action through the art really well. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very much of the time and it was easy to follow along and enjoy.
I would concur with that. Absolutely. Delvin, you going to concur?
I am going to concur. Largely agree with Ezra here. It was good artwork, good to great. And that is okay. Like, you don't have to have, and this is by no means like sliding Mr. Calafiore. You know, like he's kind of in that Herb Trimpe mold of like, is anyone ever going to say that their favorite artist is Herb Trimpe? Maybe, maybe not. I would lean more towards maybe not. But is anyone ever going to look at Herb Trimpe's work and say that that dude is nothing but the consummate professional, that he puts out great artwork and you look at it, you can clearly tell who every character is in the book and every character in the book is drawn thoughtfully? Absolutely. And I think that way about Mr. Calafiore. I thought all of his stuff was clear. His artwork was concise and good. I love how his Killmonger was bigger and bulkier like he should be. I was going to mention this on the cover. I love that if you paid attention, there are a couple of things that Black Panther, T'Challa, never wore. He never wore the headrest, the necklace that Killmonger has, and he never wears that skull, like, bracelet wrist thing. Those are two things that T'Challa does not do, but it's something that Eric Killmonger does, and it's such a nice way of distinguishing between the two of them. And you just found little touches like that throughout. The only issue that I had, and it wasn't with Mr. Calafiore, is with the colorist. There were a couple of times where I was like, wait a minute, is Tony Stark black? he sort of drew him like a little darker shade, and it was another dude in the book, Titania. Sorry, not a dude, definitely a chick.
That's not what I heard. I don't
know. So, yeah, like Titania, there was a couple of times where she looked more like a light-skinned Black African-American woman and not a, just as far as I know, Titania is, I don't know her full heritage, but white American female. So that was it. But other than that, like, it was really good artwork.
I concur with you both. I think Jim's a talented guy. I think he's got a unique style. I think you can recognize him pretty quickly due to his style. It's from an art comic creating point of view, he tends to be really light on his line work. And I guess that would go along with his inker too. His inker's not inking him heavy. It's very light line work for the most part, it looks like to me. My favorite artistic touch.
Hey, go Jared, ahead, real quick. What do you mean by that? As to
not someone, heavy lines, thin lines, not thick lines.
That's how does that translate on the book? Break it down to me like I'm five.
Okay. Well, basically, it's line thickness, line weight. It's a very thin line weight that he uses in there, which, I mean, you could look at it, and if you compare it to, let's see, who's kind of, Frank Miller tends to be heavier and darker, so you can kind of see it's a very heavy versus a light style, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. It does. That makes a lot of sense.
Thanks. Like, no seriously, problem. I didn't fully know what you meant. I just wanted a little explanation.
No worries. My favorite thing that they did artistically, which I'm sure Mr. Priest had some hand in as well, though. I really like the tech where, and it's difficult to translate tech like that in drawn art, but they did a good job. But where any member of the Avengers that's communicating over the monitors, they are not in costume, but when their images are transmitted to one another, they are transmitted. So it's just Tony Stark in a suit talking, but he looks like Iron Man when he's talking, and I can't remember who he was talking to, but it was the same thing. They weren't in costume, but they were through the transmission, which indicates that they have this very secure transmission that even if you hack in, you can't see who they really are. And I thought that was just a really cool and unique touch that the artist had to carry, really more so than anything. I could see, you know, Priest going to Jim and saying, hey, you know, this is what I want to do with the tech. I want him to be able to do this. And Jim probably sat there for about 2.5 hours going, how the hell am I going to make that work in the book? But they did. And it was a cool little thing because they didn't even really draw attention to it. You just kind of pick it up as you're reading along. That was my sort of favorite artistic little gimmick in the issue. Thought that was cool. All right. Speaking of the art pages and the interior of the book, we have come to the part of the show where we're going to pick our favorite page of art. If you could have just one page from this, you walk up to Jim and he's like, oh yeah, hey, Ezra, I saw you 23 years ago at a convention. I still have every page of original art from Deadpool 44 and you can have one. Ezra, which one do you think you'd take?
Well, I'm going to cheat and take the page where across the top, it's a 2-page spread on the top half. It's a Deadpool right kind of in the seam, and Goliath and She-Hulk are in there. Like, She-Hulk's over to the side taking a beam to the chest, and the Wasp girl is flying in. You know, there's all that on the top. And then on the bottom, there's a the rest of the fight going down. You got a fist punch, you know, the big giant fist punching into Deadpool, all that. It's a good page. I like it because on the top you get kind of the big splash page, but on the bottom you still get the panel work and see the individual panels of action.
Good selection, because that's the one I would have picked. So I don't have anything else to say. Delvin.
Gotcha.
No, dude, you're on it. Because I agree. Make it 3 for 3. If I had to pick an honorable mention, it'd be the first splash page, which is just Deadpool holding the gun literally to his hand. It just happened to have Doc the Puppet on it. That's a kind of a cool Deadpool moment in itself. But 3 for 3, I agree. That was a great action page.
Albert Elvis agreed with us in the chat. And he also asked a question that I can't remember. I actually directed it at Ezra, because Ezra clearly has the better memory of the storyline of the three of us. But does anybody know if that milk was actually poisoned or was that just an ongoing paranoid bit?
I do not remember if that was ever resolved because I didn't read the next issue. I don't know if she suddenly grew hair everywhere or maybe it was he grew hair everywhere. We're undecided. But I don't know what happened about that.
I can't remember either. I think it was just paranoia. I think that's what it was, but that's just my guess.
Just Achebe being a trickster.
I completely forgotten about the Achebe character until I opened this up. I went, oh yeah, I remember that crazy guy now.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. Like I said, when I talked earlier about how reading it just kind of brought me back there. Like it was a character I forgot even existed. But as soon as I read, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that guy.
Albert Elvis asked in the chat if he's allowed to say what Titania's secret was. And I said, go for it. I don't remember. It's been 23 years.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Dude, it's not a spoiler after 23 years.
I just saw your comment in the chat. You said, go for it. It's been
23 years.
What is wrong?
You were reading mine. You.
I was off the top of my head.
High mind.
The exact same phrasing. That's insane. All right. Well, yeah, you can spill those beans if you want to in the chat. Auburn Elvis, I'm going to say she was a Skrull.
It seemed like that's what he was hinting.
That's what I'm going
on. Oh, she's a mutant.
Oh.
The comment, I'll share with the whole class. She's a mutant. She's not really Titania. Her name is Vanessa Carlyle, and she's a mutant shapeshifter pretending to be Titania.
Well, I think the important question is Vanessa Carlyle a woman?
More to follow. I like that you say Titania, and I say Titania. If only Pat was here to settle this.
I say Titania.
Too many options. I love it. All right, guys. We're talking about September of 2000. We're talking about this Deadpool 44. Did picking this up and reading this bring back any memories for you? Maybe around comic collecting, maybe around something that was going on in your life. I know we were going to comic conventions, that's for sure. Any particular memories this brought back for you, Ezra?
Yeah, I mean, it brings back those that primarily the memory of going to that comic book convention, going to Wizard World Con in Chicago and the long road trip up there, some problems with an air mattress that ensued as a result. So we had to inflate in the middle of the night and all that kind of stuff. You know, seeing Kevin Smith and guys from the Star Wars prequels and all that. It brings back all those memories. It also brings back, for me, I had worked for a few years in Auburn, and right around this time, I was actually just starting classes at Auburn. And so it's all of that, plus the convention and working in a comic shop / gun store in Auburn. And
as you do, as one would do.
That's what you do. And so, yeah, it brings back all those memories of that time of life. You know, you guys had just left town, but I was able to go see you guys still every now and then.
Definitely. Yeah, that was a fun road trip on that one. Get the flighter. Delvin, memories around this time.
So Jared was lucky enough to start his career in mainly the Southeast, like, because you went to comm training in Mississippi. Yeah.
Yep. I was stationed in North Carolina, but I did all those months of training in Mississippi. Absolutely.
Yeah. Comm training in Mississippi, first assignment in North Carolina at Pope, right? Is it Pope?
Correct.
Yeah, and so I wasn't as fortunate geographically. My first training assignment was out in California, middle of nowhere, I'm sure people from all of our listeners from Lompoc, California are like, hey, we're not middle of nowhere. I mean, it's
send and your angry emails to contact at longboxcrusade.com.
More like postal service. I mean, come on. Then there would also, my first operational assignment was in Colorado Springs. So at that time, I had moved to Colorado Springs. And while this didn't happen in September, it happened more in April. It's a funny story, especially with two Auburn buddies who know me very well, to mention that when I had to drive out there to Colorado Springs, I drove out there by myself, from California to Colorado Springs by myself. And as anyone at that time who had been on the road with me knows, that like I pretty much can fall asleep inside of about 30 to 45 seconds being in a car. And so I remember when I got my operational assignment, I was like, all right, I'm going to Colorado Springs. My folks were worried. They were legitimately worried, like, does one of us need to fly out to California and drive with me? I was like, no, I'm good. No, baby, I'm good. I'll be fine. I'll be okay. And I was. I mean, I knew enough to, if I felt sleepy, just like either like pull into a gas station, fall asleep, stretch, and keep driving. And so I made that drive. It was a long one, but I eventually made it out to Colorado Springs to start my or to continue my Air Force adventure. So, and I'm here. So that's proof positive that I did make it alive. Either that or someone is like the name Vanessa is impersonating me and no one will ever know the difference.
Well, I take some of Delvin's memory, some of Ezra's memory, shake them up. Those are mine. I by September of 2000, I was done at comm officer training. I was back at Pope. You know what I had just done? I just moved from off base to on base. I got on base housing on Pope, which was awfully nice because I had my little motorcycle and I lived literally a half a mile from work. So I'd ride my motorcycle half a mile to work, half a mile from work every day. That's good. That's good times right there. You can set your alarm to about 7 minutes before you need to be at work and get up and still be on time.
That's even better than class at Auburn. I would like set it 10 minutes before.
So that's the only big thing, aside from that road trip with Ezra, where we drove up to Chicago, and Ezra once, I think, cleared 4 or 5 lanes of traffic.
I got that.
Yeah.
I got it.
My brother, we were following my brother, and my brother took an exit suddenly. We didn't know he was going to get off there, and Ezra was about 4 or 5 lanes over to the left, and I was like, oh, we're going to have to swing around, and then Ezra just goes, I got this. And the last thing I remember was holding on to that little handle up by the window.
Your face was up against the window. And you're just going,
ah! But hey, we made it. He didn't cut anybody off. There was no horns blaring. Did a darn fine job.
I did a quick mirror check, quick look over the shoulder. There was a path. Over there?
It's good times. Those are our memories about around the time of this comic. If you've got some, we'd love to hear them. You can send an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com. You can make a comment on the Long Box Crusade X Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, whatever. It's all Long Box Crusade. Come and find us. You know what? We're going to be right back.
Hey there. I'm sure you know about the Capes and Lunatics podcast, but have you heard about the Capes and Lunatics Sidekicks podcast? It's a fun home for classic and new reviews of just about everything. We have the Ultimate Spider Cast, where we cover everything Spider-Man. The Quantum Zone, where we talk the classic Marvel character Quasar and do deep dives on the cosmic side of Marvel. We also have Comic Capers, where we cover everything old and new in comics. It could be anything, any company, any decade. And we also have our Media Mondays, where we cover some kind of TV show, be it a Arrowverse current hit or our summer specials, where we do reviews of classic episodes of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer spinoff Angel. So, if you're a fan of pop culture and media, you should really check it out. And I promise you, you won't be disappointed.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. We're going to continue on with the show. We're going to get into one of the favorite features of the show. It's time to scan through Deadpool number 44 and look at those ads. What were people selling back at this time? Spoiler alert, it was the X-Men. Let's find out what what ads stood out to us in our segment called Add It Up.
Add It Up.
Okay, so guys, there's a lot of ads, and this is clearly the time that X-Men is in the box office. There's a lot of X-Men ads, but not exclusively. So we'll each take turns picking out the ad that stood out to us in this issue. And I do have that for those of you watching visually. I have them prepared, but I don't know who's going to pick what. But Ezra gets to go first. What ad did you prefer, Ezra?
Well, looking at your slides, I think you're just going to have to go to the very next one, because mine is that one, the Star Wars Lego ad, you know, in a book filled with ads for the X-Men movie. This one kind of stood out just because it wasn't an X-Men movie ad or an X-Men card game ad or an X-Men figure, you know, all the different merchandise. And also
I'll scroll for the viewing audience.
And also that ad, I think it just looks really cool with the Lego, you know, it looks like there's almost light up with the like little fiber optic pieces and everything. Just some really cool looking Ultimate Collector Series Lego sets, and makes me wish I had got those. I know that if I had them then and sold them on eBay, I could buy a house.
I was thinking that same thing. I was like, I don't even remember these, but dang if they don't look awesome. Should have bought two, one to put together, one to stick in your attic. Yep, they're probably worth $6.2 million a piece. Man, that X-Wing.
Yeah, those Star Wars Legos, like the Ultimate Collector ones, just go up and up and up in price. And these just look like a couple really cool vehicles.
Those are really cool. That's the X-Wing and the TIE Interceptor, I do believe, for those of us who know I'm just trying to describe it for the listening audience. They're really awesome Star Wars Legos. I assure you. All right, Delvin, what ad stood out to you for the old added up segment?
Yeah, rather than go through a F-ton of X-Men stuff, just for the heck of it, I'm going to talk about the Corn Nuts ad that was on the back cover.
What is the deal with Corn Nuts?
Have either of you ever had a Corn Nut?
Yeah, I've had Corn Nuts.
Oh, I've had a Corn Nut.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a Corn Nut before. Like, I only did it because I guess apparently they tied it to WWF. Now it's WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. At the time, it was World Wrestling Federation. They changed their name because they just completely avoided the legal battle with the World Wildlife Fund, which wanted to sue them over. And it's like, look, at least in America, if you ask anyone at the time what WWF was, I think maybe 0.5 out of 10 people would have said it was World Wildlife Fund. Everyone else would have thought wrestling, because all of us grew up on Hulk Hogan and Randy Macho Man Savage and all that. And just real quick, Courtney, with a timely comment. I just thought this was silly. It had like a couple of references, like Winky 316 says, "I just toasted your corn," which is a real off of Austin 316 said, "I just kicked your beep." So like, it was an effective ad to me. It was funny. It should have encouraged me at least at one time to eat a corn nut.
I think most of my corn nuts, the time I've eaten corn nuts, were because my favorite person, Elizabeth Louder, who might or might not still be in the chat, is a real big corn enthusiast. She says corn has the juice, and she's a big fan. So any corn product is going to come through the house. Yeah, she is a corn nut. And so corn products are going to come through the house at some point.
If I could think of one corn song from the musical group, I'd make that pun right here. But
don't get corny. Okay.
I like the selection of the Corn Nuts ad. I'm going to take the Milky Way Midnight ad. Okay. Because here's the thing. And for those of you who are listening, it just says it's a very dark page, and it's got purple lighting. It says the other Milky Way Midnight, finally out on parole, which is kind of funny. I don't like dark chocolate for the most part. I mean, I like it, but I prefer regular milk chocolate. And so when they released this Midnight bar, I was like, no. And then I tried one and I was like, oh my. Oh my. Yes, the Midnight bar is legit and I like it. I'm not allowed to have it because of the diabetes. But man, we don't get paid promotions here. But you know what? Get you a Midnight Milky Way bar. It is so good.
I never have to have Milky Way. They're not bad. Like, given a choice, like if I have to get a candy bar, I'm going to eat a Snickers because they satisfy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Snickers is
the road trip champ.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I concur. Like me, I'm a peanut butter Snickers guy. Like,
yes. Absolutely 100%.
So good.
They come in little squares. I don't know why, but
I'm not on a road trip. I'm a Reese's peanut butter cup guy. But yeah, road trip. Any version of a Snickers is you know, that's the best for the car.
Yeah, man, I love Reese's, of course, and on the road, like, but if Milky Way is an option and I just wanted a sweet, I take it. It's not bad. It just feels like it's Snickers minus for me.
I love Halloween time because then you can, you know, it's the one time you get all the minis, you know, that might pop up with the Milky Ways. That's where you get all the way through your Milky Way needs for the year for me. I'm never upset about it.
Ezra, you hadn't been to my place yet here in Charlotte, but I think, are there, hey, Jared, you have somewhat recently for the con, and in that bin of Halloween candy I have, yes. Is there Milky Way dark in there?
Not anymore.
I thought there were.
There might be some in there. Yeah, Dublin has this thing that he's trying to kill me with. He always has this bucket of leftover Halloween candy that never, I've been there like 2 years in a row and it hasn't gotten any lower. I don't know what's going on. But so if Pat was here, I'm going to play the role of Pat real quick because Pat would say, all right, I need to know everybody's favorite candy bar. Let's eliminate Snickers. Everyone's favorite non-Snickers candy bar. I've already heard from Tony Pennington in the chat. Sounds like he's a Heath bar man. So your favorite non-Snickers candy bar, and I will allow Reese's Cups to say they are a candy bar, Ezra, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I would go with Reese's Cup. It's got the family lineage as a Reese.
On the side. Yep, that's right.
But if that wasn't allowed because it's not a candy bar, I would go with Twix.
Oh, yeah. I like a good Twix. We've got in the chat, Arnold says Carmelo bars. Matt says Reese's Nut Rages. Delvin says...
Well, I mean, Ezra said Twix, but I got to know, is it left Twix or right Twix? This is an important question.
Well, if you saw Elizabeth popped up, she also said Twix. So I would take the right Twix because I'm right-handed. Mm. She would take the left Twix because she's left-handed.
That leaves us with no Twix, Delvin. None betwixt us.
No Twix betwixt us, yes. I do want to mention very quickly, like the first two that came out, Heath and Caramello, if I've ever had either one of those, I don't remember, which seems weird, right? Mm. I've eaten a lot of candy bars. I've never had a Heath. I've never had a Caramello. Man, I enjoy Reese's. I enjoy Snickers. Those are probably my biggest two. I enjoy Twix. I've had a decent amount of Twix. Man, I am blanking. How about
I'll buy you some time if you want. I got people in the chat.
Now, how about Three Musketeers? I consider Three Musketeers pretty much similar to Milky Way, though.
Like, yeah, I do, too.
Yeah, I think Three Musketeers isn't a bad choice.
Okay. In the chat, we've got some talk for the Toblerone. We got Chola talking Reese's Heath or Kinder Duplo. And I was about to say that little Kinder candy bar that the Kinder Egg people make. That might be my favorite non-Snickers bar, by the way. Is that what's called the Duplo? Is that the bar? I just know when I see Kinder in bar form, I eat it.
I've had the eggs.
Yeah,
I'll try to bring you a Toblerone. Like, I'll try to bring you a Toblerone for Christmas.
Please do. I love a Christmas Toblerone. Kathy says she's all down with Butterfinger until they change the recipe. So whatchamacallit is a current favorite. Oh, I like whatchamacallit. I'm not going to lie. I'm not supposed to do this because of diabetes, but I treated myself the other day and I grabbed a whatchamacallit and it was good.
Growing up, there was a dollar store across a big parking lot from my grandmother's house and they had whatchamacallits, so it is probably the first candy bar I remember ever having. Mm-hmm. Running over there with a buck, grabbing a couple whatchamacallits.
Mm-hmm. They have another one called, it's similar to whatchamacallits, like a thingamadoo or something. It's got a weird name like that, too. It's made by the same people, and it's just more chocolatey, I think.
It's a whatsamajigger. That's what it's called.
I'm leaving that alone.
I don't think you're allowed to say that.
It's okay. I can say it.
Albert Ellis wants to know what's the really old candy bar from the Saturday Matinee Theater. Was that the chunky, right? With that I actually ordered a box of, and I was going to send you guys some for Christmas, and then me and Jordan ate the whole box. And I have diabetes. Okay. And I see Chola talking about some delicious Kinder candy in the chat that she just might send my way. I will not reject said package. All right. Let's get the show back on track. Our next segment of the show is Way Back in Time.
Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
September 2000.
Got it. So take me away.
All right, let's get into those major news stories. These are the major news stories that were floating around in September of 2000. There's plenty to pick from. Ezra, which one do you like?
I am going to go with September 10th, the 52nd Emmy Awards. The West Wing, Will and Grace, James Gandolfini, and Cela Ward all win. We got The West Wing was a show I like. James Gandolfini, obviously from The Sopranos, great, great role that he had there. And then Cela Ward, a former cheerleader at one of my alma maters that you guys probably don't want me to claim, but University of Alabama cheerleader Cela Ward winning an Emmy there.
You know, every time someone brings up the fact that Cela Ward went to Alabama, I look at her and I'm like, she's so pretty. What is the defect? Because there's got to be one. No, I was thinking of Waffle House waitresses.
I couldn't come off of mute fast enough.
I saw you going
on YouTube.
She wants some hash browns.
Oh my goodness. If you guys remind me at the end of the show, I'll tell the audience why that's super funny. Oh man. All right. Delvin, what's your news story?
Here we go. September 16th, Sammy Sosa becomes the second player to hit 50 or more home runs in three consecutive years, joining Mark McGwire.
Then I will pick a news story from September 20th of 2000. The British MI6 Secret Intelligence Service building, which is near and dear to our hearts, as we are James Bond aficionados, was attacked by a Russian-built Mark 22 anti-tank missile. And I had to pick this one because not only was I alive and adult-ish, in September of 2000, I was also in the military, and I have no memory of this event whatsoever. It seems fairly significant, and I have no memory of it at all.
I don't remember that, but I vaguely remember around that time, like, some dude in a black suit coming, and I saw a pin. That's it.
That's it? Huh. Weird. Weird. All right, that is it for your top news stories of September of 2000. Let's find out what the top three movies in September of 2000 were, and I'll start with the number three movie. It was a movie called The Watcher. It's a thriller suspense film, made a little over $47 million. I vaguely remember this movie, but I don't think I've seen it. Anybody got anything on The Watcher?
I've seen it. Keanu Reeves, James Spader. What's her name? Plays...
Cela Ward.
plays new Aunt May on the Spider-Man stuff.
Right. Her.
She was my cousin Vinny.
Yep.
Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, Marissa Tomei. They're in it, and... I believe Keanu Reeves plays a really creepy serial killer kind of guy.
Oh, check that out.
It's good. It's fine. It's not great, but if you're a fan of the people in it, you'd enjoy it.
All right. Sounds like I might. I like a good thriller. Delvin, what do we got?
Number two movie making about $47 million is Almost Famous. Wasn't that the 70s movie?
Yeah, it's about he's following around a band that's... They're kind of a stand-in for follow around Led Zeppelin because the writer, director guy, he actually did that as how he got into the entertainment business when he was just a teenager, followed not just Led Zeppelin. I think it's actually the Allman Brothers band. That's who it actually is. Maybe he followed them around and did a bunch of interviews. And that's the basis of the movie. Cameron Crowe. That's the writer guy that did it.
I think I watched it. I don't think it was bad, but I don't remember much about it.
Kind of a pretty iconic one. It's got a lot of, you know, memorable lines and a guy standing on a roof saying, "I am a golden god," before he jumps into a pool, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I never saw it. So, Delvin, enjoy this moment.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't like it.
All right. And Ezra, bring us that number one movie.
Well, number one, $136 million. Remember the Titans. What a really cool movie, you know. As a football fan, as a guy from the South, we've probably all seen it multiple times. Denzel Washington really doing a lot of really good work. You know, Sunshine. I always remember Sunshine, a young Ken, a.k.a. Ryan Gosling, in this one, as well as, you know, tons of other people. Really a good movie that's holds up.
You know it does. It's Denzel, man. And it's one of those touching, heartwarming, makes you feel good, can't get enough of it type of films. I love it.
Yeah, fantastic movie.
Now that we're all feeling good about that, let's go into Jason's least favorite segment, especially when we're in the 2000s, because he never knows any of the music. Yeah, let's get into the top three songs according to Billboard in September of 2000. Delvin, why don't you kick us off with number three since it's near and dear to your recent heart?
I appreciate it because it's the only song that I can remember off the top of my head. Yeah, the number three song was Jumpin' Jumpin' by Destiny's Child.
I told you that she'd make an appearance on here. Beyonce was in Destiny's Child.
Yep, she was a couple of years away from breaking away from Destiny's Child and raking in all that money by herself.
Ladies, leave your bandmates at home.
Jumpin'.
So Delvin said, because you know, we can see all three because we have the script up. And when I first pulled them up, I didn't remember any of them. So I went back and I YouTubed, and when I heard Jumpin', I was like, yep, got it. Remember it. Absolutely. The number two song is Incomplete by
Cisco.
Nah, I was doing an incomplete joke. But you're right. It was Cisco. And I was like, okay, let's do it on YouTube. And I still don't remember it.
I think it goes like Incomplete by Cisco. I don't
know. I was buying it for way too long.
I was doing the melody of the Thong Song there, but
believing it.
Because I don't know that I did not remember Cisco having any other song.
Wild Wild West, he did Wild Wild West where he kind of went a little bit too crazy on the video with Will Smith and was like, bro, calm down a little bit. Going a little bit too hard in the paint, bro. So other than that, yeah, don't remember.
Ezra, would you like to reveal everyone the number one song?
And the number one song was Doesn't Really Matter by Janet Jackson. I did remember this song. I've actually played it at a trivia when I posted trivia as a hint or something at some point. But it is not top tier Janet. And it's just looking at this list, it's very surprising that Jumpin' is not number one. It feels like it should be number one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And I know a lot of Janet Jackson. And I don't know this song. Like I'll go listen to it afterwards and maybe be like, oh, but I don't know this song.
I listened to it before the show and I heard it and I went, okay, yeah, I remember it, but it is not one of the big ones. And thanks to watching the video, I also was reminded that it was the tie-in song to The Nutty Professor 2. And that is
okay. Yeah. I remember not liking that movie too much either because, like, they were trying to make Janet Jackson, like, a thing as far as, like, you know, that double threat at least of acting and singing. And Janet Jackson dancing, 10 out of 10. Singing, not that great, but, like, combined singing with dancing, great performer. Like, legendary songs, no doubt about it. Acting, no. No. Miss Jackson on that didn't do so great in my opinion, but still.
I see you called her Miss Jackson because you are nasty.
Yeah. Oh wait, I was right there. Hold on. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. I'm for real.
Is you for real?
At least I remember. I feel better. I feel better about it. We can move on. Next segment.
All right. Guess what? You're in charge of that. Go.
Okay. Hold on. That brings us to the end of this part in the show. Now let's get to the feedback part of the show called Crusader Comments. We're thrilled to kick off these comments with special shout outs to our Crusaders Club members. These are the fine folks that have joined our crusade. They enjoy priority seating as podcast guests, early access to special long box episodes, voting to help determine show content, backstage access to live recordings, and so much more. These are the folks reaping the benefits and giving some much appreciated support to the show.
Angelica Wolf.
Oh. Auburn Elvis.
Blast It or Stash It.
Braxton Underwood.
Clinton Robeson.
Captain Entropy.
Dave Collins.
Ezra Gallo.
Gary V.
Gerald Green.
Jason Keen.
Jason Lady.
Jeremy L.
Jim. Jammin. I hope you like Jammin too.
Jim Meal with us in the chat.
Joe Thomas.
John Watson.
Josh Strickland.
Candace Ward.
Captivating Kathy Bright, the MVP.
And she was in the chat too, I believe. Also in the chat, Matt and Lissy Passo.
Mark Ross.
Yeah. Maxwell Traver.
Miranda W.
P.D. Devins.
Yeah. Paul Hicks,
Rick of Jeff and Rick Present,
Rob Morgan,
Samantha Maining,
Sean Urbanski,
Spidey 67,
Spreadsheet,
Steve Cronin,
Tim Price,
Tony Bennington,
and last but not least, Toronto Cop. If we missed anyone on our list, we do apologize. Keep in mind, we record these episodes well in advance of release, so if you're a recent addition, we should be adding you soon. Still looking to get to 40, y'all. We're right there on the cusp. But still, no worries. Just let us know that we missed you by sending an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com. We'll straighten it out. As a reminder, you can become a Crusaders Club member by heading over to patreon.com/longboxcrusade. For as little as $1 a month, you'll get access to the amazing world of the Crusaders Club. Come check it out. Money's a little tight, but you still want to help us out? Guess what's free? Taking a moment to write a review on whatever platform you're listening to, going on YouTube and subscribing and liking this live stream, and join us for our live episodes. We love to have you. Now we're going to be discussing some comments from Long Box Crusade episode 39. We talked about Tomb Raider 2. It was January 2000.
We had Scotty Cameron at Scotty's a Cam 97.
The Bat Pod.
Days of High Adventure Podcast.
Fan Film Fridays Podcast.
Coffee and Comics.
And let's see, we have a couple of comments. I'll read both from Scotty Cameron. Scotty Cameron looks like he replied on Twitter, X if you're nasty, and he also replied on Spotify and just said he was just 2 years old in the year 2000 and all he wanted to do was watch Toy Story. You Go Direct site is something I'm struggling to find any information about because all of the results are for You Go Direct. If I had to take a guess, it might be a store akin to DK Oldies. Oh, I understood about 8 words of that tweet.
Yeah, there was an ad for You Go Direct but the ad in the comic, we couldn't figure out what it was.
It might be back in that era, the Disney had a thing where they had the Go Network. It was like go.com, and so it was going to be like there was ESPN Go was a thing for a while, and I all remember. These things they had, and it was a big network. The company that I used to work for actually had like joined up in this network. They were kind of trying to make their own sub internet almost on this big Go network, so it might be a reference. Since he's talking about wanting to watch Toy Story, it might be a reference to something along with that Go network.
Nice. I said I was going to read both, but since there are only 3 comments, two of them are from Scotty. Jared, do you want to read the other Scotty Cameron comment from Spotify?
Absolutely, absolutely. Scotty's really helps out the show because he comments in multiple places. One of them was on the Twitter tweets, X if you're nasty. And the other one, I think, is from Spotify. I'm not sure, but, you know, the more comments you can leave in different locations really helps us with the algorithm, so we appreciate that, Scotty. Scotty says, great episode. I haven't played much Tomb Raider or read much of the comics, but I always enjoy listening to the Long Box crew discuss comics. And man, I love that. I love the fact that you're here for us regardless of what we're talking about. And oh, by the way, awesome games and awesome comics when it comes to Tomb Raider.
Ezra, you have a lengthy comment to read there if you want to.
From Glenn Peterman says, man, I loved that series.
I would appreciate it if you wouldn't run so long next time, Ezra. We're trying to run a professional outfit around here. It's okay. I'm also very forgiving. You can call us and leave us a voicemail, and we will play it on the show right here.
Hi, this is Ezra, a first-time caller, long-time listener. I'm calling about the Long Box Crusade, particularly the episode about issue number 44 of Deadpool. I think one of the things that I enjoy most about that particular comic is the letters page. There are just some really insightful and fun letters by some really insightful and fun people. I hope you guys didn't miss it.
And since I did that, someone has to call now and leave a comment about this live stream. You can call us at 707-532-5269. That is 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone.
Thank you, Jared. And thank you to everyone for the likes, shares, follows, and comments. We appreciate your friendship and your help in spreading the word about this podcast.
And that is the show. Be sure to check out the website, longboxcrusade.com, where posts will be made to chronicle our crusade. I want to thank Pat for not being here, Jared, Jason for not being here, Delvin and Ezra on this episode. But before we go, let's find out where the listeners can find us on the internet. We will start with Delvin.
You can find me on Twitter/X, DEE_RAY1977. You can find me on Instagram, Delvin Ray. Ezra?
You can find me at Easy Rooster. That's EAZY Rooster on Twitter/X, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, Foursquare. That's about it. Yeah.
I was waiting, like, bands, Reddit.
I'm Jared Ulrich, the Yard Sale Artist. You can find me at Yard Sale Artist on Twitter X, Facebook, Instagram, Skip Scabble, Snurf Blots, Schniggleputz, and Swoop 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 Swoop.
I don't think those are real.
You can check out my artwares at www.theyardsaleartist.com. Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Long Box Crusade. Of course, if you have a comment or question, email contact@longboxcrusade.com or check out Long Box Crusade on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or X, or Snip Snap Skebbles, or Vootapatakoo. And until next time, take care, everybody. And join us next episode as we continue on the crusade to
read them all.
The intro music is provided by musical genius Joe November.
Check out his SoundCloud at JOSEFLIN99. You won't regret it.
All songs, song clips, and characters discussed are copyright of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. We are just fans that like to share our love of comics.
Outtakes.
Now, before we get started,
add it up. See what you got. Will they edit that out on?
No, man, that'll stay.
Ads.
Let's get into the major news stories.
Hold on. I'm sorry. That was rude of me.
Take me away. Oh. I don't mind, but you gotta promise me I'll be back in time.
Okay, we can start now. I apologize to everybody.
It had to be done.
Yeah. Huey Lewis in the dark web.
That's right. By the way, Ezra's already left a voicemail about this episode. True story.
Yeah, I left it earlier today.
That's wonderful. I'm sure he's like, man, there, you know, that guest on the show was great. You should have him back again. That's my guess of what.
Well, it is about something the guest may have done regarding this comic.
Mm-hmm. Read them all. That's fun to say.
Read them all.
Read them all.
Yeah.